Welcome to the brightest audience in the nation to the Bob Enyart Live February Telethon. During our telethon this month, we're offering a free gift, Bob's video series, Having a Great Prayer Life, when you become a new subscriber to any of our monthly subscriptions. Our newest product, our monthly sermon audios on standard compact disc, allows you to listen to the sermon on any CD player, including the one in your car. You can also get the monthly sermons on MP3 CD, or you can get the video version of the monthly sermon videos on DVD. Bob's monthly Bible studies are now available on DVD or MP3 CD. These are great for starting your own family Bible study or a neighborhood Bible study. And Bob's monthly topical videos give you a new topical video each month, and with the best of Bob, you can get the best 8 Bob Enyart Live shows every month. By becoming a new subscriber to any of Bob's monthly products, making a new monthly donation of $20 or more, or a one-time donation of $50, you'll receive the video series, Having a Great Prayer Life, free of charge, special this month for the Bob Enyart Live February Telethon.
Greetings to another episode of Real Science Friday. I'm Bob Enyart.
And I'm Fred Williams, creation speaker and software engineer.
Fred, I'd like to give a list of some of the topics we'd like to cover, and probably we'll have to do most of these on next week's show.
Okay, it sounds good.
We have a lot of fun stuff. We want to talk about the Man of War, Portuguese Man of War. We want to talk about the Aaron Rod debate that's begun this week, the well-known atheist that I'm debating in a written debate online, and also there's a fin on the back of almost every fish in the world. Evolutionists think it had no purpose. Well, guess what? Okay. There's a bird they found older than Archaeopteryx, and that's freaking them out because they said that birds evolved from Archaeopteryx. Global warming. There's a full-size ark being built by our friends over at Answers in Genesis in Kentucky. And then a hummingbird. Something fascinating about a hummingbird.
Yeah, I think they're direct descendants of the Venus flytrap.
That's one way of looking at that latest research. So, Fred, let's do that. Also, this is our annual February telethon for Bob Enyart Live to keep us on the internet reaching out, and that includes Real Science Friday, not to be confused with NPR's parody titled Science Friday.
Yeah, they're parody of us. That's
they're
right.
Parody. We are the real Science Friday. They're on hundreds of radio stations, and we are on one radio station. So, Fred, our telethon is so very important. People, one new offering we have, people could subscribe to our monthly sermons on audio CD. We've never offered that before. Now we have our monthly sermons on audio CD from Denver Bible Church, and they play in any CD player, including the one in your car.
Okay, and MP3 also?
That's right, MP3, also on DVD, the sermons, and our Bible studies, our monthly studies, our book studies of the Bible, and we have topical DVDs. And Fred, you know that if somebody signs up for our topical DVD subscription, that means they get one or two DVDs every month, whatever they'd like, then we also have a lot of fabulous science DVDs that they'll get in the mail, third-party DVDs, and a debate that you and I were involved with on the age of the Earth, which is so fun. So anyway, we got a lot of great materials.
Oh, absolutely. These DVDs are fantastic that you are just holding up here.
Yeah.
Our created solar system.
Oh, Astronomy by Spike Bisaris and Fossils and Evolution, the Grand Experiment by Dr. Carl Werner, and then the whole Intelligent Design Collection.
Mount St. Helens.
Oh, Mount St. Helens, Explosive Evidence for Catastrophe. Really tremendous. And then Walt Brown's book, In the Beginning, which is my all-time favorite next to the Bible. So, Fred, why don't we begin with this story in Answers in Genesis, Ken Ham's group. They have a magazine called Answers Magazine. This is their winter 2012, January through March edition. And there's an article in here about the Portuguese Man of War.
So you're not talking about that horse?
A horse?
The horse. the one that won all those races back after World War One.
One of the greatest ever, right?
Yeah.
Ranked.
I think top five, probably. Most people know of Man of War and think of a racehorse.
There's another horse, War Horse. There's a movie out right now.
Yeah, that Spielberg movie, right?
That's right. Cheryl and I went to see that. We don't go to many movies, and we don't recommend many movies. This movie has nothing sexual, immoral, of course, no vulgarity. But we didn't bring our kids because the movie's pretty rough. Like, there are kids in the movie who get murdered, just get killed, kids. It's harsh. The Germans in World War One, they're at it again, you know. But it's a good movie. But no, that's not what this story's about.
Well, so this man of war is about a jelly-type fish,
a jellyfish,
an invertebrate.
Well, the Portuguese man of war.
Which was named after a British warship, by the way.
Oh, I did not know that. But this jellyfish-like creature is not Portuguese.
It's not Portuguese.
It's okay. Not a man.
Is it Spanish?
But it goes to war. I got stung when I was a kid swimming on the Jersey Shore. You know, I grew up in New Jersey. Might have been on Jones Beach in Long Island. I forget where I got stung. By jellyfish, and I don't know if it was a man of war or not. I don't think so.
Okay. Well, you know, it's funny. In Wikipedia, when they talk about man of war, it says the best treatment for a Portuguese man of war sting is the first bullet item, to avoid any further contact with the Portuguese man of war.
Yeah, that's the best treatment.
No kidding.
Like, doctor.
Stating the obvious.
It hurts whenever I stick my finger in my eye.
Well, don't do that.
So, okay. Now, what we're about to share about the Portuguese man of war is going to stun the audience, and it's going to defy evolution, Darwinism.
Oh, this thing is incredible. It's a collection of four different types of animals.
Now,
it's a colony.
One of our producers, Russ Holmes, knows a lot about science, a lot. I'm going to ask him. He's from Alaska.
Okay.
Did you know, Russ, that this jellyfish-like creature, the Portuguese man of war, is not one animal? It's four different animals that attach themselves.
So we're showing him a picture.
He said he thought it was five.
So he did know about it. Figures.
All right. I was stunned. Russ
I was
knew
too.
About this. I was absolutely stunned.
You were literally too.
Fred, yes. Yeah. Fred, they're called zooids, and they're different animals that have this relationship where they function as one organism, and they all need each other.
Yeah, it's amazing. Each one has a different role in the colony. Like, one of the functions is a balloon.
The balloon that
allows it
to
float.
Yeah.
And plus, they can form it into a sail to kind of get away from predators or zoom along and go for a joyride. It's amazing.
Yeah. And the sails come in two varieties, left-handed and right-handed.
Now, why would God do that?
Well, because if they were all, say, left-handed sails, they'd all tend to go as they are in swarms or schools, they'd all end up sort of in the same place.
The same direction.
But because they're left and right-handed sails, as the wind blows, they spread out a bit so they don't climb all over one another.
Yeah, so you have an equal amount of left-handed and right-handed ones that go in different directions so they don't all clump together.
Like human beings, when we have kids, we have about an equal number of boys and girls, which is so very convenient, and another piece of evidence that God intended monogamy. Because if he intended men to have five wives, he would have had us have, you know, five daughters to every son.
Yeah, that's true.
But he didn't. So anyway, the man of war are half left-handed, half right-handed sails, so to speak. And that's one of the four animals that make up a Portuguese man of war. Then there are the other three animals. The one directs the tentacles that catch food and ward off predators.
So how do they ward off predators?
By stinging them.
By stinging them. Yeah. Well, you know what was neat?
And it hurts.
So you've got experience with that. It's stunning.
Yes.
So the other thing that's neat is there's actually a symbiotic relationship with this thing. What is that? Well, clownfish, which I have in my saltwater tank, and they love to go in this anemone because it protects them.
At your home?
At my home.
There's an anemone?
There's an anemone.
All right.
It's a creature made up of almost all water, practically.
Wow.
And it has all these tentacles, just like this does. And the clownfish... Well, whenever I feed the tank, it grabs food and feeds this anemone, and then it lives.
Feeds the anemone? Now, what if a human were to step on an anemone?
I don't know what would happen there. It's not the same thing as a jellyfish, but they do sting. I mean, I don't put my hand in the tank and find out.
Mm-hmm.
But so, I know that it hurts, and it's actually killed other fish in my tank. I've had other fish get caught in this thing.
They're lethal.
They got too close to the anemone. So it reminds me of this fish that I call the Al Davis fish because it has a scowl on its face and it's black and white.
Yeah.
And that's the guy that got caught in the anemone and got, you know, digested.
Yeah. So they're lethal, but the clownfish has a symbiotic relationship with the anemone.
Yeah.
You're saying it takes the food and it goes and feeds the anemone?
Yeah, and the anemone protects it from the other big fish in the tank because they'll get stung by it, and the clownfish just live in that thing. And when they get startled, they hide underneath it and this and that. Well, this man-o-war, it also provides the same protection to clownfish and also a fish called the shepherd fish.
So those are symbiotic relationships where it's like the fish that clean the teeth of sharks or whatever.
Yeah.
All these amazing relationships in nature.
So how does that happen by the natural process?
By natural processes, because the first time a fish swam up to the mouth of a shark, you'd think that'd be the last time the fish.
Yeah.
He wouldn't live long enough to reproduce 1,000 generations until they somehow in their DNA inherited this death wish to clean the teeth of a shark, for example.
Or in this case, you know, the bobfish goes and gets stung, you know, kind of like you did in New Jersey by this thing. And
it goes
the fish says, I'm not going near that.
Right.
But some mutation happens and it makes me think, well, I'm going to be brave and go into that thing and discover, hey, this protects me.
Right.
How dumb is that?
It can't happen by chance. It's not
this
a reasonable
design.
Hypothesis.
Yeah, this is another thing of this points to design.
Yes. And so this is design now on steroids.
Big time.
This is not a normal symbiotic relationship. This is where four creatures come together. They're called zooids because they need one another to survive. So you have the balloon, the sail, that you typically see above the surface of the ocean. And then you have the tentacles part. And then this third zooid is responsible for digestion.
Yeah, so the things that it catches, this third set of animals that's part of this colony helps digest the material, the food.
Yeah, so what would be the good of this creature, this Portuguese man of war, if he had the sail and he had the tentacles, but he didn't have the animal, the zooid, that digests the prey that it catches? It would just die.
It would just die. No nutrients.
And what's the good of the being able to digest it if you can't get around and if you can't capture your prey? And then there's a fourth zooid, which is so very important. It's for reproduction.
Yeah. So the fourth one's so that you can have other colonies of zooids forming a man of war.
Yeah. And they share, they're connected. All four are connected to a hollow central stem. And they share information and food. And it not only serves to connect the zooids to each other, but it serves as the communal stomach. So without that common bond, the four zooids would die.
Yeah. So how did these things come together into one organism? How did that possibly happen?
Yeah.
Because, again, they're four separate organisms. And if you look at this thing, it looks like a jellyfish, right? If people could see a picture of it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just so awesome. And so this is similar to our challenge we offered to P.Z. Myers, who, by the way, is friends with Aaron Ra, two atheist evolutionists. And P.Z. Myers, our Trochlea challenge, which people could go online, just Google Trochlea, this sling in the eye, the human eye, and you'll see our P.Z. Myers Trochlea challenge. Fred, that's a perfect introduction to the debate with Aaron Ra, because it's supposed to be on evolution generally.
Yeah, this League of Reason?
Yeah, League of Reason, and this is mostly a gathering of like-minded atheists and evolutionists, and they've agreed to host this debate, a written debate. Aaron Ra and I went at it back in the fall here on Real Science Friday, and people could listen to it.
You can order that too, right?
Yeah.
You can order that.
People could order it from us, or they can get it for free. That's a trade secret. They could get it for free online at realsciencefriday.com. And so this now is a debate. And Fred, I'm wondering if you would read, I got to post first. And my goal was to post about this topic of phylogeny and the tree of life. But Aaron Ra was posting before our debate started without letting us know in his own thread there. And could you read this one excerpt? Because I quote this at the beginning of my post.
I liked what he said here about claiming that Bob was planning to ignore all the questions, challenges, and evidence already posted against Bob. Mm-hmm. And then he goes on to say that way Bob can dodge the systematic refutation of everything he got wrong, which is everything he said.
Right, yeah. Yeah, we're about ready to start a debate that we planned back in November. And he posted a book online, like 10, 20 pages
Elephant
worth
hurling.
Of stuff. And he criticized me in every paragraph. And he said, Bob wants to avoid all the challenges and questions. I've already proved that he's wrong on everything he said on all the shows we did. Everything. Imagine that.
And I love the first thing he brings up is that Sir Isaac Newton is not a creationist.
That's the first thing.
What a way to start the debate.
That's the first thing he
writes. Well, that was a really hard fastball, huh? You had trouble swinging at that one?
Right.
Or is that a softball that you can just hit out of the park with little effort?
So, Fred, I'd like to read some of this for the audience from our first quote, and feel free to interact, all right? But as we discussed on the air, Aaron Ra, in his first foundational video, he calls it, said that there's a complete consensus among scientists all over America that evolution is the backbone of modern biology.
Well, how many times have we heard that?
Yeah, and so we have a good time, you know, offering contrasting evidence to that. And so that's what I thought I would do. And so I responded with actual links and references, which Aaron left out there on that point. Mm-hmm. And I said, for example, 34% of U.S. doctors prefer intelligent design over Darwinism. That's pretty significant. Scores of prominent scientists, and I gave an example who reject Darwinism.
Yeah, John Sanford.
That's right, from Cornell University, who invented the gene gun. Many of the greatest fathers of the physical sciences, both before and after Darwin, were special creationists.
Yeah, and I think you're being kind to say many. It's really virtually all.
It's so many of them, right?
All the founding fathers of the sciences.
Yeah. So I point out, I say, Aaron Ra, in your first video where you're criticizing creationists, you make an appeal to authority. And they, boy, Fred, they accuse us of that, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we'll quote Isaac Newton said something about gravity, and they'll say, you can't appeal to authority. But that's what he was doing. He was making an appeal to authority when he said, look, this must be true because most scientists agree with this. Mm-hmm. That's an appeal to authority. And if as long as you identify what you're doing, that's okay. But he doesn't identify it as an appeal to authority. And so I pointed out that to counter for some contrasting evidence to your appeal to authority, I'd like to list these scientists before and after Darwin who rejected natural origins and believed in special creation by God and even by the God of the Bible. And so then I listed Copernicus, and this is in the debate written and on the air, Copernicus, Francis Bacon, Kepler, Galileo, Pascal, Boyle, Newton, Cuvier, Dalton. Now, these are big names, right?
These are really big names.
Big names. Anybody who knows the history of science, these are the biggies. And after Darwin, there was Faraday, Mendel, Pasteur, Joule, Kelvin, Lister, and Carver, and along with many others who continue to reject evolution and advocate for a special creation, and those were all after Darwin.
You know, it reminds me, just today at work, a coworker said that the scientists are smart enough that they're going to outsmart, he didn't use the word God, but this whole man can only live for 120 years, and I explained to him there's a telomere thing on the chromosomes.
It's
part of why, you know, we can't live past 120 years.
Right.
He goes, well, you know, our scientists are really smart, and they'll figure that out. This guy's, you know, he's an evolutionist. Mm. And I mentioned to him, I said, well, can you name me one scientist of the past that's a father of one of the major sciences that wasn't a Bible-believing Christian?
Wow.
And he couldn't think of one.
Offhand,
you know.
He could have.
Offhand. Now,
I think you could come up with
There's
some.
There's going to be maybe a few, but like I said,
and especially
virtually
in the
all
more
of them.
Modern times, right, like Einstein, the father of relativity and all, and Stephen Hawking, the father of blackness.
Blackness?
Or black holes.
Okay.
And other black things. But anyway, so there are some, but overwhelmingly, modern science was birthed in Christianized Europe by men who were committed to a Christian biblical worldview that the universe is rational because it was created by a personal God.
Yeah, and all the technology we have now is based on those sciences.
Those scientists. And we've offered a challenge to evolutionists to give us an example of a technology or an invention that requires Darwinism or the Big Bang to function.
And what's the result been?
So far, nothing. And we put a big list of inventions on our website. Just go to kgov.com/technologies, and you'll see a big, long list of major inventions. And we say, which of these requires a belief in Darwinism, evolution, or the Big Bang to invent these or use these? And they don't.
Later, maybe not today, but next Friday, we'll get to a growing list that they've provided in the Answers magazine.
Biomimetics. Yeah, biomimicry. It's just great. Okay, so then I go on to say to Aaron Ra, I say, Aaron, you said that I cannot include Isaac Newton among special creationists and that he adhered to methodological naturalism, which Fred does not allow scientists to talk about the influence of God in origins or any other aspect of reality.
Well, I like the standard he provided. I'm just not sure if he'll abide by it.
Oh, yeah, right. He did provide.
Yeah, he said that neither of us should get away with making indefensible assertions just to sound right, in this case on the radio. Accuracy and accountability matter.
Yeah.
So let's hope that he recognizes his error on Sir Isaac Newton, because the evidence is like way overwhelming. It's like him trying to argue that Mitt Romney's not a Mormon.
Yeah, you know, right.
Because of maybe right. some sound clip or some article. That,
right,
you know,
right.
It's indefensible. It,
or that Barack Obama is not a politician or is not a Democrat.
Yeah.
It'd be like arguing yeah. that. And so he refused to admit that Isaac Newton was a creationist, and we sparred on that on the air for a bit. And then in writing, that's the first thing he did, was to mock me for saying that Isaac Newton was a creationist.
Wow. And then this debate's supposed to be about the tree of life, phylogeny, in support of evolution?
Yeah, it is. Okay. But I thought, well, he's making fun of me because I'm afraid to start by addressing his accusations against me. And his first accusation was I said Isaac Newton was a creationist, and he's saying I'm a fool and I can't defend any of my claims.
Well, and yeah, remember he said everything you got wrong, which is everything you said.
Everything. He said I got everything wrong in the whole discussion.
Did you get his name wrong?
Wherever we disagreed with one another. Why don't you read what he wrote about me and Isaac Newton?
Sure. He said, I don't know if Enyart can show that Newton ever denied any natural explanation in favor of an inexplicable miracle. Neither do I think he can show where Newton wrote extensively, quote unquote, about this.
It's just unbelievable.
Yeah.
I told him that Newton wrote more about the chronology of the Bible to defend the Bible and about theology and Christianity than he ever did about math or physics.
And so what comes to mind is you're at the plate and there's a 8-year-old underhand throwing a
right.
softball to you.
And I get to swing.
10 feet away and you get a swing.
To win the game. So, for one, all you had to do was Google. Just
yeah,
Google.
Yeah.
Isaac Newton, the writings of Isaac Newton, Isaac Newton's belief system, just anything. But he did nothing, Fred, and he's mocking the creationist. So I have a little section called The Creationist Isaac Newton. And I said, Aaron, I tried to remind you on the air that Newton held that God specially created the first two humans, Adam and Eve, in the Garden of Eden. Newton wrote extensively to show the correctness of the biblical chronology, starting with the creation.
Yeah, and that was, what, a 5-page pamphlet?
No, it was almost a 400-page book called The Chronology of Ancient Kingdoms. Newton believed specifically that the one true God, by his divine will, specially created the earth. Newton rejected the possibility of a naturalistic origin of the solar system.
Oh, so he's not an old universe, old earth kind of guy?
He sure isn't. Newton held that God specially created the solar system in full operation along with the entire cosmos. And then the last bullet, Fred, what was that?
Yeah, he admires Bishop Usher. Who is that guy? He's the one who calculated using genealogies.
From the Bible.
From the Bible. He came up with a date of about 4,000 B.C. when the earth was created.
Right.
And so Sir Isaac Newton
admired Bishop Usher's work, which is a stunning piece of scholarship.
And he defended it. Doesn't sound like a naturalist to me.
And he basically agreed with it, that God created about 4,000 B.C.
Yeah, Bob, he is not a creationist. He's not Bob. He's not. La, 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 la.
Right. This is not the creationist you're looking for. Go about your business. It's like a Jedi mind trick Aaron Ross trying to use on us. And so I quote from Isaac Newton, and this is Old English from 1692. But this is one example of Newton's worldview from hundreds of possible examples. This is from a letter he wrote February 11th, 1692, to a man named Richard Bentley. And this comes right from the Newton Project, which is a big effort on the internet in England. So you link right to the originals. Isaac Newton wrote, "The hypothesis of deriving the world by mechanical principles from matter spread through the heavens is inconsistent with my system." You know, Newton figured out gravity.
Yeah.
Universal gravitation. That was his discovery. So he said, "That's inconsistent. And I'd considered it before, but I'd like to write to you more, Richard Bentley, about this. In my former writing, I represented the rotations of the planets could not be derived from gravity, but required a divine power to impress them."
Who is that divine power? Was that Stephen Hawking?
That was God, right? So Isaac Newton is saying gravity would not explain the orbit of the planets. It requires God to set the whole system in motion. And he says, you know, gravity might give the planets a motion of descent towards the sun, but the transverse motions by which they revolve in their orbits require the divine arm to impress them according to their orbits.
Yeah.
The tangents of their orbs, he wrote. Certainly, he said, that which can never be today or in the future without a supernatural power could never be without the same power in the past. So he said there cannot be a natural origin for the solar system. It had to start with the creation of God, which he believed was 4,000 years before Christ. So, Fred, it is so absurd for Aaron Ra to say that Isaac Newton cannot be considered a creationist.
The first point for this debate, for him to bring up, is amazing. I mean, I think you can tie both your arms around your back, tie a leg behind your back, both legs,
right.
Just be an invalid.
Tie half
ear,
my brain behind
your nose
my back.
Behind your back, and he throws that one out. I mean, come on.
And you still knock it out of the park.
Yeah.
And so he calls Christians believers in magic. He says, we believe in magic, and our God is just really magic. We believe in abracadabra. So...
And yet the man of war is all happened by chance and natural processes.
Right.
Who believes in magic?
Who believes in magic? So I said, Aaron, I know you're committed to saying we believe in magic, but please consider the difference between magic and the God of the Bible. Because if there was a God of magic presented in a book, Fred, then he could do things like this. He could change the past. Change the past.
Yeah.
If you could do magic, you could change the past. You could simultaneously exist and not exist. You could make duplicates of yourself. You could do all the things that the Bible would say that God cannot do, because God is a God of truth, logic, reason, mm-hmm. and reality. He can't duplicate himself. He can't go back in the past and make Adam and Eve obey him.
Yeah, so unlike all these sci-fi movies where you go back in the past and change everything, just like in Star Trek, is none of the original episodes happened because the latest one says it had a time change.
Right, so I have my question number one to Aaron Ra in our debate. I'm asking you to now agree that if you are going to list scientists by their claims on origins, that you will list Isaac Newton among the literal creationists.
And I hope that he abides by his own standard. Neither of us should get away with making indefensible assertions just to sound right.
Whoa. And our telethon in February is so important. Please help out. God bless you. This is Bob Inyart inviting you to read our manuscript, The Plot, for an overview of the whole Bible. Call us at 800-836-9278. That's 836-9278.